The role of New Zealand's Maori royalty, or kingitanga, is infused within the whole of the nation. It's a combined tribal rule that since 1857 has placed a strong family at the head of most Maori tribes in New Zealand and has ever since been able to speak and fight for Maori culture, history and identity. Professor Tamoti Karitu is the former head of the Maori Language Commission and a close confidant of the Maori kingitanga. He takes us through the history of the Maori establishment of their own royal family.
It was a political move way back in the 1850s when it was realised that a lot of Maori land was being taken by the colonisers of the time, mainly the British, and taken by foul means rather than fair. And so all the chiefs of the country got together and met and decided that they would try to strike up some opposition to that constantly happening. So when it was decided that they might try to emulate a king, in inverted commas, concept, all the chiefs got together and they started seeing who had the highest pedigree. So they went around the country, and it's quite a well-known story that all the chiefs were there, and each declined because in his or her his opinion, he wasn't really quite up to it and didn't have the pedigree. And in one case, one chief sort of said, I don't need to go and be a king somewhere else. I'm already a king in my own territory. But in the end, all the tribes decided on the ancestor of the late Dame Aotearoa to be the king. And he was only in that position for about a year when he died, and then his son took over. But it was set up as a political move about 1857, 1858. And that was its reason. That was the genesis of the whole movement, to try to sort of prevent any further land sales and the confiscation of land, whether by fair means or foul.
Do all Maori then consider the kingitanga as their royalty or their native leadership?
I think most do. There are some who did not subscribe to the idea. But I think what's happened is, particularly with the late Tariki Nui, she earned her reputation. Her very demeanour commanded respect from everybody, and she had that no matter where she went, in her role as paramount chief of her own tribe. So as a paramount chieftainess, she got all the kudos that were due to her because of that position. And there's been no outspoken tribe against the whole movement. So I would think over time, and particularly during her 40 years on the throne, she's actually brought the people together more than perhaps her predecessors did.
New Zealand's Prime Minister Helen Clark is well versed in the family and history that leads the Maori. She tells TVNZ of the power and influence the kingitanga, or royal family, commands.
The influence went beyond the kingitanga. And let's think back to what the people involved in the kingitanga had been through. The Waikato River, taken by storm gunboat troopers. The whole resistance of the king movement, the king country line. I grew up in a district called Te Pahu, in the heart of Tainui country, and about probably 8-10 miles from where our farm was the king country line, where the troopers then went south and took on the king movement. So the rallying of people behind the kingitanga as a force for resurrection from a pretty brutal colonial suppression. And you'll see the battle sites at Rangiriri. You'll see them just to the east or west of Kihikihi in the mid Waikato. They had a tremendous job to do to pull a very dispirited people forward. Now, she's in the tradition of those people. She kept leading them forward. And that's why I say the treaty settlement is probably one of the most significant things that's come out of her 40-year period.
The kingitanga throughout history have earned their right to lead the Maori people, says Professor Karitu.
Well, I think they did a lot for the desisting of illegal land sales. And although they lost a lot of land themselves, they had a lot of land confiscated because they dared to fight against the Queen. And that was because they wanted their own lands left sacrosanct. But, you know, they were sort of Sir George Grey and his people came in and took land off them because they dared to raise their hand against Queen Victoria, I think was the argument. And in fact, the King Country, which is an area of the country, was set up and they were told that nobody who was non-Maori should cross the certain river, which was the boundary of the territory of the King movement. And that was really quite a strong stand to take. and they were prepared to fight and die for their rights, and they did fight, and they did lose a lot of people. But I think they commanded respect, and that, I think, is one of the best ways of sort of bringing some solution and some resolution to a lot of these issues. I mean, the government recognized a lot of the ill will that had emanated from them, and the tribe was given $170 million, and vast tracts of land were returned as an acknowledgement of the fact that they'd been badly treated by government, by previous governments.
Does the Kingitanga bind together a coherent entity as
yes,
the Maori?
The Kingitanga itself is a coherent entity, particularly amongst her own tribe, but she commands, as I said before, such respect that whenever there's a gathering there, people just flock. Like at her 40th anniversary, there was in a sense about 40,000 people showed up to sort of pay their respects to her during that whole week of celebration. So that's the power and the lure of the movement, because it's one of those movements that has sort of given somewhere for the people to look and to get them to sort of be the guiding hand, if you like, in the whole of the Maori world.
From the outside, we see a queen and we think a nominal head of a movement. Normally, heads of state who are queens and monarchs in Western societies, for example, are very much nominal figures. But in this case, the queen did all the protocol, the representation work, but behind the scenes, she was an indispensable part of what went on.
Prime Minister Clark says it's the strength of cohesion and continuity of the Maori royal family that has led it to such prominence for its people.
I think the Kingitanga would put enormous emphasis on continuity, because that's what served them very, very well through the whole period of Kingitanga. And Dame Te Ata has been a tremendously stabilising force of continuity for 40 years. Look how Maoridom's changed in 40 years, but Kingitanga always had the traditions that she upheld.
The Queen and Kingitanga have likewise steered and advised the re-emergence of the Maori language and culture throughout New Zealand. The Minister for Maori Affairs, Perikura Horomia, says she was the key to this regaining of the disappearing Maori language.
She kept the culture. She was patron of our language resurgence, Te Kohangarau. She was patron of the Maori Women's Welfare League, which is a long-formed organisation. And through her reign of 40 years, she was always quite specifically recognised as a key advisor and influencer.
She was the patron of what we call the Kohanga Reo movement, which started in the 82, which was one of the moves from the old people at the time to sort of stop language erosion. And she was very instrumental in being one of the founders of that group. And she remained the patron right up until her death. And because of her interest, other people around the country could see, well, if the number one lady of the land were interested, then why shouldn't they be? But some tribes had lost the language to quite a high degree, and it was that sort of movement and people like her who were involved in it that galvanised the whole country, the Maori population, that is, into doing something about language retention. And, of course, we are in the healthy state we are today. Not as healthy as I would like, but certainly a great deal healthier than we were in 81, 82.
She had royalty from around the world beat a path to her door at Te Ranga Waewae, heads of state, heads of government, foreign delegations, and I think it's important to sing her praises as a diplomat and representative of New Zealand.